title of the program is Challenges Facing Honolulu Seniors by Mayoral Candidates. And we did invite all the major candidates to come talk. And we immediately got one response from Panos Prevedouros, who's here with us today. And the rest of them I have called and emailed, and it's not that they declined, it's that most of them did not respond. So, yeah. This program is recorded, and it appears on the Kukua Council website. So, in addition to all you folks who've come here today, many more people go to our website to hear the programs, you know, right from the comfort of their computer chair without leaving their home. So it will get some exposure, we hope, and we're looking forward to a program. While the subject is senior issues, we're not limiting it to that, and particularly since we do have the time to use up. What we'd like to do is have up to about half an hour is available for talk, and to have the questions follow. The alternative is, if somebody has a question, to, you know, put your hand up if it's on an issue that's being discussed. And then we have a microphone for questions. We'd like you to speak into the microphone so that your question gets recorded onto the podcast. So that it's about the only rules that we have. Otherwise, it's free form. We hope for a lively discussion. And with that, let me introduce our speaker. And actually, if you could describe, you know, introduce yourself a little, that would be a great help. Yeah.
Let's see, how is the sound? Good? Very good, very good. Well, thank you for the invitation. I mean, this is turning out to be my talk story to you, so I appreciate it. I usually do talk stories and I get 20 to 50 people, so this is what it is, and I usually speak for about 20 minutes and then I get your questions. So I'm not going to be too long in my lecture. So let me tell you a little bit about me. My name is Panos Prevedouros. Panos, if you can believe it, is short for Panagiotis, which means holy forever. Go figure. And Prevedouros is a Greek version of an Italian word, Venetian, Prevedoro, keeper of the gold, the holy forever treasurer. Against Captain Kirk and Mr. Carlyle, who doesn't like cars. So that's a joke of sorts. So I've been here for 20 years. I've been in the United States for 25 years, so most of my half-life, because I'm 49 years old. I did my undergraduate studies in engineers, and then I did master's and PhD at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. Northwestern is the third to sixth ranked top engineering program in the nation. So I've been doing quite well academically and in engineering, and I'm actually a subcommittee member for the National Academy of Engineering, specializing in traffic and transportation. I have done a lot of work because sometimes, you know, you tend to distrust academics as talking a big story but never having done actual work. If you go on the internet, you will see my resume. I have done work for most engineering and law firms in Hawaii, as well as work in California, Illinois, and in Greece. A major project we did in Greece, it's really a mega project, was the so-called Attica Highway, which is H1, H2, and H3 combined in length, 40 centerline miles, with a train in the middle, and we built that for a little less than $2 billion in 6 years in preparation for the 2004 Olympics. So that road was built in 6 years from 98 to 2004 in a city of 5 million people with a lot of archaeological treasures and et cetera, et cetera. So it was a very difficult undertaking, and it has worked to decongest Athens. So I'm not here to sell trains or roads to anybody. I'm a very civic-minded engineer trying to do right for my constituency. And this has been my intent all along. My natural advantage over my competition is the fact that I know how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide. You may think that this is a very minimum qualification. But then, and I have confronted Mr. Carlisle with his wish to have a train from Waianae to Hawaii Kai and over the Koolaus. I mean, how political can we get? That's $15 billion. So Peter, with all due respect, he doesn't know how to divide, because local government doesn't have any money. It's all our money. So how can you divide $15 billion by 400,000 taxpayers and make sense? So it is a system that is unattainable. In the introduction, we talked a little bit about the H3 freeway. I want to spend 30 seconds just because a lot of people are making this parallel. We got the H3 freeway, now maybe we need to do rail for Kapolei. Two observations. Number one, H3 freeway in today's money is roughly $1.6 billion, not $6 billion, 1.6. 80% of it, because that's the standard formula for highways, federal government. See, in transit systems, there is always give and take, give and take. Other systems for transit get 70%. Other systems like ours get only 25% federal subsidy. On highways, 80%. Non-negotiation. It's just that your project has to meet minimum attainment criteria. So it's a much better deal. And the way I bring it up is because you were around and you know you didn't pay extra for it. Your gasoline tax and whatever paid for it. We did not get taxed extra to get the H3 freeway. For the train, $4 billion is all local taxes. Cha-ching. That's out of pocket. That's what the GET tax will do. Now, the interesting thing about the rail is that we cannot afford it. And the financing plan the city has is not good. Not because I tell you, is because if you go to the Federal Transit Administration website now and type in Honolulu High Capacity Corridor, you will see that our project overall is rated medium. Typically, medium systems are not built. They only build the ones rated high because they don't have enough money to build the mediums and the highs. But our financing plan is rated low, which means we don't have the money to do it. It is very significant. Remember that when the Hanneman administration went to the legislature, they said that roughly the cost of rail will be $2.7 billion and they needed 1% GET increase. The legislature gave them half of this. What is the current cost of the rail? $5.5 billion. Twice as much the cost, half the tax. What is the rest of the equation? It doesn't take a genius. 40% increase in property taxes to make the numbers match. However, this announcement is coming up after the elections. If a pro-rail person starts building it, very soon he or she, well, we don't have a she in the mayor's race, right? Actually, we do have one. Yeah, that's true. So he or she will announce that, you know, there has to be extra taxes. That's one main reason why I'm stopping it. We cannot afford it. The second part is we do not need it. Because if you look at the city's own numbers, it clearly says that the rail is the 1% solution. Today, the bus is carrying 6% of the trips on a typical day on Oahu. In 2030, bus and rail combined will be carrying 7%. You paid $6 billion for that. 93% still drives. So that's why I'm a very unpopular guy when I visit Kapolei and I tell my neighbors there that your best day in traffic was yesterday, rail or not. The city's own numbers show that in 2030, congestion with rail will be far worse than it is today, simply because people will not use it. It is my expectation, and actually there is a lot of national research that proves that, that rail is the least desirable mode of transportation for seniors because it involves a lot of transfers. You got to get to a bus, you got to get to a station, escalators, elevators, out of the train, and repeat the chain at the other end, and then repeat the chain to return home. That is an extremely inconvenient mode of transportation. And you paid all that money, and if, no good, you get handicapped, again, the rail is the least convenient mode for transportation for the handicapped. So what are we talking about? It's the same with our UH students. Our UH students do not go between station 3 and 17. They have very complicated lives throughout Oahu, and most people. So, and the numbers of the city actually do prove it. That is not going to be a useful thing. Now, I want to step back and look at what is going on with the city. And the reason that I run is not really to stop the rail. I have to do that anyhow. But stopping the rail is not really the mayor's action for the next 2, 6, or 10 years. And you will see it on my t-shirts and everywhere. My motto is fix Oahu. Fix Oahu. We have, because we did a Freedom of Information Act to the Board of Water Supply, 364 water main breaks per year. They have an average cost of $250,000 to fix each one of them. Some of the water main breaks are significant because they close schools, they close businesses, they may destroy adjacent property because the pressure is very high. So we need to fix that. I do not need to tell you that our sidewalks and our parks are not in good shape. Investment on those has gone way down. I still understand that quite a few of you still drive. We have the second worst roads in the nation. When I came here in 1990, we had among the best roads in the nation. But 20 years of neglect got us millions of potholes. We got to fix them. My overall vision is to do what we can afford to do as best as possible and try to return the postcard picture expectation, image expectation we and our visitors have of Oahu. So we are happy living on Oahu, and they are happy visiting Oahu. Now Oahu looks very run down, and it's full of homeless at Kapiolani and Kaimuki. I know you're going to ask me questions about that, but my objective is to get a handle on the homeless problem, minimize it as soon as possible and as quickly as possible with as little resources as possible, because I want to focus on you. And I'm not pandering to you, but you are. Seniors is the largest demographic. It's catching up to me as a mayor. I cannot ignore it. You are here and you will be living long lives. This is this is where the demography of Hawaii and the nation is going. You will be having increased needs. Most of you, bless you, will be living over 80, and I hope to do the same myself. But that's far more than the traditional actuarial tables. So you have increasing needs for many, many years into the future. And the city has to facilitate from safe sidewalks, frequent and safe bus service, safe pedestrian crossings, and a handicap service that works, that you don't have to reserve 2 days in advance. It is pitiful to say the city's own study says that our handy van, that we title it as handy van, is not ADA compliant. It is not. The official report says that. Because part of the violation is that you have to do 24-hour reservation. What kind of service is that? And actually, one ride on the handy van on the average costs between $20 and $30, depending on how you count the money. For $20, I could give you a voucher and you could get instant taxi service. If you know your needs are not specialized to have canisters or other, you know, something that, you know, a regular taxi van can accommodate. So we got to move into this. And funny thing about, you know, our demographic to senior, another assault into the rail, which will come in a form of lawsuit, is that DBDT has updated their forecasts. And the forecasts show that in 2030, because of the graying of our population, 150,000 commuting trips have disappeared. Because in 2030, I will be 70. Well, I'll be 69. So my cohorts will not be doing commuting trips. The train, we build it for the commuters, right, for the crash loads. Well, we're going to have more elderly and less working people, so the commuting trips will shrink. Yet another reason why you don't need rail. So you are a driving force, not only because you vote, but because you also have specialized needs for many things that the city does. And there are things that we can do, such as, you know, legalize Ohana housing. Right now, sometimes it's in many households, it is illegal for the parents to stay with their children because the downstairs, the city does not allow a refrigerator, sink, and kitchen for the elders to stay with their kids and make, you know, the use of the second unit, you know, not as convenient as it could be. So many things. With that, basically, this is my introduction to you, that I want to use my knowledge for construction. The big thing that I didn't mention, let me open that big parenthesis, because now whoever we elect mayor is tied up to a very, very large project. Which is that one? What am I referring to? What is the very, very large project that it doesn't matter who you elect for mayor, it has to be done?
Sewers.
Sewers, that's the thing. 3 weeks before Mufi Hanneman left the office, he shook hands and he signed the city and county into a consent decree that does two things: fix the sewers and construct two secondary treatment environmental plans for sewers again. I don't know if you are aware of the fact that we are the only city in the United States that does not completely treat the sewage. We have only first level. Essentially, we collect the solids and the rest of it, we shoot it down the ocean, 1.5 miles deep, 1,000 feet down. We have been doing that for 30 years, and unfortunately, the buck has stopped. Now, researchers from the UH will tell us, and I believe that they are correct, that we're actually do not pollute anything. We do pollute Mother Earth, but that E. coli and other bacteria don't come back to our beaches because we've been doing it for 30 years and there is no credible evidence that this is a bad practice. However, EPA found it unacceptable. Mufi Hanneman did not create that problem. Actually, it was Mayor Fassi who started the process of memorandums of understanding with the EPA, and we kept getting 4 to 8 year exemptions. Finally, at Mufi's time, the buck stopped. EPA said no. So Mufi sued in local federal court. We lost. We appealed in federal court in San Francisco. We lost. Simply put, game over. Okay, what does that mean now? $3.5 billion to replace the sewer lines, and $1.2 billion for two environmental plans. That comes up to $4.7 billion plus two 10-year floats of bonds, comes up to $7.2 billion. That's why if you saw me on TV, I actually announced, because this is the truth, that the sewers have flushed the rail down the toilet. So it doesn't matter if you love rail anymore. Rail is $6 billion. Well, the sewers came in at $7 billion. No more. Down the toilet. So some of my competition wants to do both. Again, what I said is that, you know, we don't have $13 billion. That's why I joke that they don't know how to add and divide by the population. So, and basically, let me close with this statement that this town, and for some of you, you may actually literally remember him, that we had a civil engineer as mayor for 19 years, Johnny Wilson. Johnny Wilson was my colleague. He was a roads engineer and a civil engineer in the 40s and 50s. He served as mayor for 19 years. We named Wilson Tunnels on Likelike Highway in his honor, and we named Wilson Elementary in Kahala in his honor. Engineers do great things. Let me continue joking about this thing, but one household name that you know is Lee Iacocca. He saved Chrysler from bankruptcy. He is an industrial engineer. We have three major motor companies: Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler. Two of them went bankrupt in the last 2 years. Ford did not. Ford has as chief executive officer Alan Mulally. He's the one, he's an aeronautical engineer. He used to build airplanes. See, from airplanes, he went to cars, and he did a wonderful job. Ford did not go bankrupt. Believe me, we have a built-in ability to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, and respect for your money to do projects cost-effectively and rationally. So with that, I'm going to close, and maybe we have my competitor and, you know, city council member Rod Tam here to present his viewpoint, but I'll leave that up to you.
Okay.
Close with me, and then what's your plan?
And then let's have Ron, and then we'll open up questions to both.
Okay. Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to introduce another mayoral candidate, Rod Tam. And what we'll do, Rod, come on, make yourself at home here. You can use this microphone or this one, and at the end we'll use this one for questions.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm sorry the little delay. When you're a candidate for any office, you got a lot of phone calls, and then people just want to talk, and I don't mind basically, and so the hours are long. But anyway, I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to make presentation before all of you. And I realize this is basic in terms of reference to senior citizens. And I, for one thing, I've been working with senior citizens for a very, very long time. And let me tell you a story. It's kind of actually funny about it. When I was 26 years old, I was asked to run for office, House Representatives, by the senior citizens. Not by youth, basically, not by people of my own age or middle age, but by senior citizens. And what happened, I had joined in with projects within the community. And these were all basic problem issues, like in terms of getting roads resurfaced, talking started with senior citizens to learn. And in fact, if I may, my heritage is of the Chinese ancestry. I'm fifth generation. And I've learned a lot from senior citizens about my own heritage and culture. And in fact, there are no books written about Chinese, when you think about it, factual books. There's a lot of stories, but nothing factual about it. And like, for example, the burning of Chinatown. There are many stories about that burning of Chinatown. But you know, basically, that was all about in terms of competition. They say it was rats, but actually, every place has rats. And I used to work for Holiday Mart as a department store manager. And even in the warehouse, you have rats, basically, and where all the food is stored in bags and canned goods and so forth. But anyway, what happened, the real burning of Chinatown was all about in terms of competition. See, what happened with the Chinese culturally is that you tend to give away things. You give away in terms of discounts and so forth, and there was a lot of competition with some of the big companies like Alexander Baldwin and so forth. And so they were upset, so they decided to get rid of the competition. So they used the bases in terms of the rats. But the fire spread too fast, quite frankly, and it burned all of Chinatown down, and that's what happened historically. That's the truth. I have here some brochures identifying who is Rod Tam. And if I may pass it on at this time. And characteristically, who is Rod Tam? Rod Tam is distinct terms is basically independent. I am a very independent person. I am not beholden to any lobbyist groups or special interest groups. And I'm committed to the community itself. And then innovative. I look for innovative ideas in terms of what to do to resolve problems. And sometimes it's out of the box. Sometimes it's made people make things unusual. But it's solutions in terms of some of our problems. And a funny thing that happened to me a number of years ago when I got into office in 1984, and first time I lost, but second time I made it, and again it was a senior citizen that put me into office. And what happened is I used to take homework, and I still do, in a box, you know, or one of those hand-carry cardboard boxes, basically, in duplicated boxes, and the paper is heavy. So I used to carry it from the fourth floor of state capitol down to my car. My car was parked in Ilani Palace. And to be honest with you, the reason I parked there rather than downstairs in a basement was because it was cheaper. right? And so I used to walk over and carry this box, and I said, wow, this box of paper is heavy, but I will go home and do all my homework, whether late at night or early in the morning. Well, what happened is I discovered there was a portable luggage carrier. So I started using that in 1984. And lo and behold, people started laughing at me. Today, everybody uses a portable luggage carrier. And basically, the days of before at the legislature was everything was paper. Right? Not computer, but paper. So you had to pick up all the bills and resolutions and just carry it in a box, basically. You'd be amazed at how many people, as educated as they are, would be just be carrying a box load of paper rather than put it on wheels and carrying it or putting it along. But anyway, now the trend is to do it. Even attorneys understand now don't carry their paperwork or their bags. What they do is they wheel it into the court, right, because it's heavy. Also, too, thirdly, I'm a grassroots person. I'm out in the community. I'm hardly in the office. I see my former colleague here, Jim Sean, and Jim can attest to that. And people say, where's Rod Tam? You know, we try to look into his office. He's not there. Well, you can reach me by telephone. In the back of the brochure is my cellular number. You can always call me and from 6 o'clock in the morning all the way to 10 o'clock at night. I want to accept phone calls. And I want to get out in the community to learn and find out what's happening and talk story rather than sit behind a desk and just read reports. Reading reports is helpful, but one doesn't really get the gist of what's going on in the community. And that's my way of life. In terms of focusing on our economy, I want to build our economy. And before doing that, let me express in terms of why I'm running for mayor. The job of the mayor basically oversees the day-to-day operations of the City County Honolulu services. The job of the mayor is also to plan for the future. And many of you have experience in terms of the past and look forward even for the future, especially for your children or your grandchildren. What is the future lying behold of the City County of Honolulu and the State of Hawaii? The City and County of Honolulu is the engine for our economy. There are over 1 million people here in the City and County of Honolulu, and basically all your economic stimulation or business is basically here when you think about it. We in the City and County of Honolulu through your taxes, when you pay property taxes or income taxes and so forth, support the rest of the counties, quite frankly. You know, what I want to do is stabilize and stimulate our economy here in the city and county of Honolulu so that we can look forward in terms of more of a successful life, whatever the means in terms of your means, whether it be materially or just stability in terms of paying your rent or your mortgage or other things like supporting your youth. There are some questions here, if I may. Can I mention a question that you wanted me to respond to? And the first one is, we understand that the city is in the process of selling its public housing projects to private owners. What can the city do to assure that housing will be available to low-income older groups? Well, basically, this whole proposal in terms of selling the affordable housing, like in downtown, Chinatown, Gateway, and so forth, to nonprofit organizations to maintain this status of affordable rental housing was my idea. My idea is basically is that since we in the city are not able to really handle the management well, efficiently, because we do contract out those housing projects to management, that we should sell those projects, but keep the land. And the reason we say keep the land is because then we can mandate in terms of how the rental will be, low, affordable rental, and also sales of these units. Now, hopefully, the administration is following through. Now, at this time, the current administration, the past administration, hasn't made much progress, to be honest with you. And we have to find out why. We have to dig into it deeper as to why they're not making any progress. Because there's concern from those tenants. Those tenants are pretty scared when you think about it. They don't know what the future lies, whether this is going to be continual affordable housing. And besides that, I'm getting complaints from the tenants about the conditions of their rental units, with maintenance, etc. Number two question is, assuming that the rail system is actually built, how do you think, in quotes, transit-oriented development might be used to help meet the needs of older people? Well, basically, there's an existing contract right now in terms of building the rail, okay? And the big question in terms of whether we can afford it. What I would do as mayor is look into it in terms of making sure there's a proper budget in the future. We don't want to have a project basically in the midstream that all of a sudden it stopped. If you ever seen some construction projects basically, and there was one on Pensacola, and this developer just ran out of money, basically. And so what happened is the bank, Central Pacific Bank, repossessed the whole project itself. And now it's at a standstill. I don't know who's going to buy that project, basically. It's a condominium, by the way. So I would make sure that we have budget to construct properly and also to maintain the maintenance and administration of such a rail project. Now, if the rail does go through completely, what we need is more buses. And I know senior citizens catch buses a lot, quite frankly. Even if you don't catch the rail, we do need more buses. I live in Powell Valley, and the rail doesn't go up there, quite frankly. It's not projected to go up there. What we need in my community up there is more buses. The bus comes every 20 minutes or so, and that's not fast enough, to be honest with you. Okay, so we need more access to buses and handicapped vans and so forth. So I see the projection whereby if there's a rail, then there will be more buses. But I say this now, quite frankly, that we need more buses now. This is my proposal now. It's going to take over 20 years to construct this rail from Eva all the way to downtown to Onward Summit Center. What I propose is that we have a bus lane only. Bus lane only on the right lane. And people will ask me, well, how can I make my right turn at the intersection or into a driveway? Well, the law will be basically that only 20 feet before you make that right turn can you enter the bus lane. That way the bus can move a lot faster. It won't get caught up in traffic also too. And then it's safer for those who drive cars also too, because you know how the buses, they're always rushing and they crisscross you in and out of their lanes also too. So if we have a devoted bus lane, then you have more road safety. Number three question. Some other county governments in Hawaii provide funds to supplement federal and state funds for services to older people, such as meals, homemaker assistance, personal care, etc. What do you think Honolulu should do on this? Why or why not? We have a program which the City County of Honolulu now gives grants. It's called Meals on Wheels, okay? And it's organized by the Lani Kila, okay, Meals on Wheels program. It's right on Bachelor Street here. It's a well-established program, and they do island-wide services, okay? We need more services like that, quite frankly. And, you know, sometimes one has to realize by talking to seniors, like I do, that seniors have a hard time getting three meals a day, quite frankly, especially complete meals, okay? Whereby you have your starch, your protein, your vegetables, etc., okay? I've seen seniors whereby they don't eat much, quite frankly, because they're on a tight budget, living on Social Security or just some retirement from government, basically. It's not enough. Okay. Now, let me tell you, I'm a senior citizen. I'm 56 years old. I'm going to be 57 in October. So I have experience in terms of that. And when you think about it, to be honest with you, I live also on a fixed income, not only do I receive my compensation, which took a cut in terms of because of the economy as a city councilman, but I also get my retirement. Now, my retirement, if I didn't have this job, basically, as a city councilman, I would take home about $1,200 a month. $1,200 a month. You know, basically, it's hard to live on. And I still have two teenagers. My son is 18 years old, and my daughter is 17. I got married late. I got married when I was 34 years old. So it makes a big difference. So I understand the terms what senior citizens have to go through many times. Number four, what are the city-89's policy and rules regarding when city workers retire? What do you think of the idea of using retirees to help fill gaps in critical needed services? Well, let me tell you in terms of my experience in terms of retirement pension of the city. The city retirement pension was better before. It is not good now. Before, what it was is that when you put into your pension, and you have to reach a certain age of 55 years or older, and you draw your pension, it will take care of your spouse too, if you had a spouse. If you had any children that's underage, it will take care of your children for health care. Today, the plan is not good at all. Not only do you receive in terms of your compensation in dollars, but the medical plan is terrible. What it is it only takes care of the former retired employee. But you have to pay about 20% of your retired medical plan. And if you have a spouse, then you got to pay for your spouse in total. So the plan is not good. We need, in terms of more comprehensive health plans, to take care of these. You want to end? Okay. One more question. Now, what is the role of the city in providing services to seniors? And which is a very important question today. The role of the city is basically in the area of parks and recreation, to provide activities. And I use example like that of Lanikila Senior Citizen Center. Okay. The state of Hawaii and also the city provides funds for these services, so activities and recreation activities to keep you active, basically, you know, and to utilize your talent also too. Many of the senior citizens from Lanikila, as an example, what I experienced, they go out into the community. They participate on the Meals on Wheels, for example, and a number of other things. They also do vibrant things in developing their culture, their heritage, whether it be Chinese, Japanese, Okinawan, Hawaiian, what else, and many others. There are over 100 different ethnic cultures here within our city and county of Honolulu. So it's a great way of keeping involvement in the city and county of Honolulu. We should provide more programs like that. Now, people say, well, what about the money financially? Well, we can provide programs whereby there'd be some service charges for those who participate. Not large amounts, a few amounts. You know, for example, like if you have to buy materials for arts and craft, you put in so much money and so forth. But we would pay for those instructors, basically. Okay? And you get to take home whatever your product is, basically. So it's yours. That's the kind of programs I like to see. And I want to thank you very much for this opportunity. And also, too, I want to emphasize that I make myself available. You can give me a call. There's a magnet designed as a telephone. And be free to call me.
Thank you. We're going into our question phase now, so don't go away. What I'm going to do is just reorganize the front. I'll put two chairs over here. And if you both wouldn't mind sitting in the front. We don't have a table, but this will do. Thank you. And for questions, I'll pass around the mic, and you may direct your question to either candidate or both. How's that? And let's plan on wrapping up in about half an hour at 1 p.m.
Mr. Prevedoris, Noriel, Fix the Roads, and we're going to have fewer commuters in the future. But what about the traffic that's now? What is your plan for that?
The question was, what do we do about the traffic we have now? And indeed, Honolulu is one of the most congested cities in the nation for its size. Number one solution, fix the traffic lights. It sounds simple, but it's not done. When I present it in class, many times I say that the traffic lights operate as Christmas lights. You think I'm exaggerating? We actually did an experiment. If you were to take Beretania Street from the Pax Alley to the police station, if the lights were coordinated, it would have been 3 minutes. Today, try it for yourself. It never takes any less than 7 or 8 minutes. And one Friday with rain, it took 55 minutes. Okay. Funny thing, last Monday I was shadowed by a reporter of what a mayoral candidate will do. Middle of the day, we had an hour, and I said, let's go drive up and down the streets and see what's going on. Now, if the lights are coordinated, you should get over 80% of the intersections in green. We could not get even 50%. 50%, you know what 50% means? Random. Half of them are red, half of them are green. So you have to be significantly above 50%, and that's exactly what we got. I said, sorry, I didn't plan it. You choose the street, we do it. Then, at very congested intersections, we'll do one lane underpass, very similar to what Singapore, Washington, D.C. have. These are $5 to $15 million projects. What does one lane underpass do? One lane, 100% green time. You never stop. And that makes it also way safer for pedestrians because the bulk of traffic on the typical heavy movement, like you come from Kailua at Vineyard, Pali and Vineyard, you have Pali going under Vineyard, one lane per direction, solves congestion by 30% for $5 to $15 million. And then we can do more regional projects and all, but if you're internet savvy, please go Google four letters, UHCS, University of Hawaii Congestion Study. We did that and we presented it at the legislature at the Capitol, and they told us, good plan, but the rail is city kuleana, so, you know, we got to leave them alone with that. A lot of good solutions.
Aloha Panos.
Hi.
What is the top environmental issue that you see?
The top environmental issue. Well, part of the problem is infringement of city into the natural world and our biggest environmental threats right now is the conversion of the prime agricultural land we have in Eva into transit-oriented development. We really don't have sustainable lands for agriculture on Oahu. We have a big problem with that. In terms of environmental threat, Oahu as a metropolitan area ranks pretty high in terms of pollution of all sorts, pretty high in the good sense in terms of pollution and other issues of that nature. So I don't see any major threats other than the disappearing of agricultural land and, of course, issues with the fisheries and all, but that goes well beyond Mayor Kuleana, so I cannot really get into the fisheries problem and global warming threats and all.
I have a question for both candidates. It has to do with traffic again, but senior citizens are being killed in crosswalks. 2 years ago, there was a major slaughter that made the newspaper. Mm-hmm. But even today, last week, there was an article about someone killed in a crosswalk on King Street. King Street has been a hazard as mm-hmm. long as I've been living here. So I'd like to ask each of you briefly, you know, not a long explanation, but a brief explanation sure. of what you would do, for example, to make King Street safe for senior citizens to cross the street.
I have been actually on record, since my traffic safety is part of my expertise, totally opposed to unsignalized intersections crossing multi-lane streets over 3 lanes. They are terrible for pedestrians, but they also criminalize drivers. Attentive drivers that, you know, a couple of cars have stopped, but they were not sure of what is going on. And that lady that hit the child over here, she has no intent of hitting a six-year-old child. She had 2 children in her van. Probably she was partially inattentive. but the situation also trapped her into an accident. Bottom line, we can do what is called pedestrian activated signalized intersections. They stay green all the time, they don't affect traffic, but when they get a pedestrian call, they find the right time and they provide pedestrian walk. And one last recommendation is that the California Highway Code has been upgraded with over 30 pages of treatments for pedestrians. Our highway pedestrian code is very minimal, so we have a lot to do in terms of pedestrian safety. Rod, your turn.
That's a very good question. And what it is basically can be responded by having all the crosswalks, signal lights reviewed, basically, especially in the urban area. People are sometimes unattentive in terms of when they drive. And let me say why we should review in terms of the timing of these crosswalks. And it's like my competitor here said that basically traffic lights need to be reviewed in terms of being synchronized. Okay, and they're not right now all synchronized, to be honest with you. Any one of us who drive a car can see that, basically. It's like stopping every other block, and basically when you think about it sometimes, it gets very annoying. So when it gets very annoying, people become very impatient in driving. It starts speeding up. I give you an example in terms of what I would like to see also, too, is that every crosswalk have a walk signal synchronized. As an example, this is my urban area, which as a city councilman, I had received concerns or complaints about School Street. Right in front of St. Teresa Church and St. Teresa School. And the concern was for our youth and also the elderly around the area, and for anybody, quite frankly. So what it is I came with the idea of putting a traffic walk signal. Basically, when you want to walk across the street, you just push the button and the walk signal would come on. It provided a much safer environment for everybody. So I like to see more signal lights in terms of walk signals around. Thank you.
I have a question about finances, which seems to be the theme of the day as much as anything. We now rely on a little bit of a regressive GET, and we rely on property taxes, which tax people's homes, which is a distorted view of income and hits different people in awkward ways, and certainly is not particularly helpful for seniors who may be just refinancing their home, and then, you know, as we retire, we have another 30 years to pay off, whatever. The most progressive, however, tax in general is an income tax. Would either of you favor substituting a city and county income tax for these other sources of revenue, which are less perfect instruments, let us say, for evening out the burden of taxes?
John, the short of it is yes. GET tax is the most regressive, the most insidious tax we could ever come up with, and it's actually hidden in every transaction we do and affects basic services the most. So getting rid a big part of it and replacing it with some other form of taxation is more fair. In addition, I would like to, since he brought up finances, it's an important question. There are services that they can be making money in the form of public-private partnerships. Several venues exist, including our nation's capital, where in order to address congestion, in addition to the roadways they have, they develop express lanes separate that they are priced, and they generate income from the usage. In this way, the buses go express for free, and then wheeling motorists pay an extra charge, which again is used to fix the roads. Nobody's asking you to pay the toll, but if you would like in the middle of rush hour to travel at 55 miles an hour, you have the option of paying $3. That's why these things are so popular. We proposed that, and Mufi Hahnemann shut it down, and he started saying, you know, the toll will be $9. Nobody will be able to pay $9. Well, it is $9 on a very bad days in Los Angeles. Denver, for example, has a modern system of what is called hot lanes, and the charge is never over $3.5, and Denver is 5 million people. So the charge will be reasonable, and again, the H1 freeway, Kamehameha, and all remain free roads. Nobody is touching the free roads, but extra capacity will be priced, and it's a win-win situation because the money pay for the construction, so you don't have to pay extra for it. That's one of several tools for financing.
I'm standing up here. I'm sorry. Please go. Please talk loud.
Okay. In regards to taxes, you have to, first of all, evaluate who oversees these taxes. Income tax is overseen by the state of Hawaii, not by the city and county of Honolulu. The city and county of Honolulu only has a taxing powers, which is a number of years over 15 years ago, allowed by the state of Hawaii over property tax, okay? And also you have a gasoline tax, and the state also taxes on gasoline. And we have service taxes. Yeah, when you pay for, you want services, then you pay a fee, basically, that type of thing. But basically, the city depends on its property tax for revenues. And we also depend, the city, on money given by the state to the city and the other counties. Now, so the state of Hawaii is the big father, basically, that keeps all the money. Now, the reason we're having problems surviving in the city is because the state is not giving the city enough money, okay? And also, too, they have to realize in terms of sometimes there's a duplication of services. Why can't we understand and get together what services should be provided, whether it be for the state or the city? There's confusion going on. So what happens? Many of us, including myself, we are overtaxed when you think about it. Okay, and I was a budget analyst before, okay, in the private sector and also the public sector. Let me also say this, that basically it's a nightmare in terms of your property tax. The property tax, and I've done a study, an evaluation of property tax, is based on four elements in terms of how you tax. Number one is basically the size of your property, the square footage. And of course, where you're located, whether it be in town area, urban area, or you located in terms of EVA, okay, town is a little bit more expensive on a square footage basis. Then the square footage of your dwelling. If you live in a single-family residence, the square footage, or you live in a condominium, the square footage also too. Now, the third item, your tax is assessed, is basic on improvements to your house or to your property. If you put a fence there or stone wall, the value of your house is more, okay, or your property is more. If you renovate your kitchen, the value of your house is more. Every time you get a permit, you get taxed more, basically, okay? But get this, the real devil of your property tax is what you call the market value. You know, when you think about it, many of us as senior citizens, when you own something, you own a residence, you don't plan to move, you don't plan to reinvest and sell. You're going to live there, quite frankly. Why? Because that was your dream, to have your own home. Now, the market value is a bad way of taxing on property tax. It's speculation. Speculation is not good basic formula. I have told my colleagues and the past administration on the Mufi Hahnemann and Jeremy Harris and even the current administration that we need to redevelop that formula. That formula in terms of having the market value should be gotten rid of. What we should have is the rate of inflation or consumer price index, quite frankly, which is how we budget for services in the state and also the city. I was a state representative and senator for 20 years, and now currently a city councilman for past 8 years. But That's my proposal to get rid of. Then it would be a lot easier on all of us in terms of property tax. But we need to stimulate. I want to bring in money from overseas, by the way. And I've been venturing into for over 20 years into China, Taiwan, Vietnam, Japan, and so forth. And all my visit there has been by invitation of government officials, whereby they want to bring money here. We need to open the doors. This is how China turned their economy around. Thank you.
I came up here because I wanted to demonstrate my condition. So far, my brains are okay. So far, I like to go places. But so far, with a city and county sidewalks and streets, it's impossible for me to go safely with my walker. And my doctor says, whatever you do, don't fall. Also, I want to caution two men. When you talk to old folks, we have an attention span like children. And it's only so long. And after that, I see people dozing. After that, they wander. Make it short and simple. The two things that I wanted to ask you, if you are really determined, is that under Hanneman, Mufi, we did away with the housing department. I'm living in a city-owned apartment building, which I don't know if I'll be able to live there because the city has decided that they don't want to be in the housing department. And that's ridiculous. We have, 550,000 people in the city and county of Honolulu, and whether they want to put an apartment somewhere, it becomes a political football, like they want to put a homeless in Chinatown. We have a nice Chinatown. We have a Chinatown that has character. What do we need more homeless people in there? And it's politics. It's politics. We need a city housing. And I know you said, but you didn't mention the city housing that I could know. And the other thing we need is we need a regular, even tomorrow, if you're elected mayor tomorrow, start doing this city repair, at least in the small cities. I live on Bethel Street. Bethel Street only goes from Alawana to Baratania. There are so many potholes. There are so many lumps. There are so many bumps. It's dangerous. So that's my caution. It's a question and an answer. Thank you. Thank you.
I think the question can be summed up in terms of repair and maintenance of our city facilities, sidewalks and roads and so forth. And for many years now, the 30 years or 32 years, I was a chairman for neighborhood board in this area for 3.5 years and before going to representative. That has been my focus, is proper facilities, the roads, the sidewalks and so forth. Your member is right in terms of the sidewalks. And there's all kind of designs in terms of surfacing. And basically, when you look in terms of it, all these different designs, sometimes it makes it hard to walk. You know, some of maybe have rough surfaces, some smooth surfaces, and you have cracks in the sidewalks. We need to review all the facilities. And as mayor, I will do that. I will send out the crew to review all the sidewalks and develop a repair maintenance program for roads. In fact, by the end of this year, all the roads respectively in the urban area, my city council should be resurfaced. I've been working on it for the past 8 years. It was a tough call because that was not a priority of the past administrations. But we have the money. We have the money for taking care of the roads. Okay, thank you.
Well, time and again, the political answer is that it will get done, and they never do it. That's why I keep saying that we need a change in government and change in priorities. A civil engineer finds fun in repairing roads and sidewalks. Politicians typically do not. So this is a basic function, and actually I am working actively as we speak with the outdoor circle to finish the sidewalks, make a survey, find out which segments need repairs, and also simplify the signage and the signage poles, that all of them make it also very difficult to navigate with wheelchairs and walking and walkers, etc. As for housing, it is a loaded question, you know. There is so much the city can do, but I am a proponent on record of the Chinatown for the elderly, not for homeless. We have a homeless crisis, but part of it we made it ourselves. One part of it, the federal government brought it upon us with a pact with Micronesia. So we get a lot of Micronesians coming in. Unfortunately, for every 10 of them, 9 come to Hawaii, 1 goes to mainland. And we don't get enough federal funding to handle that. As a result, there is a lot of resentment. I recently visited Kuhio Park Terrace, and there are absolutely no local people there. All of them are Micronesian. So a huge housing project has gone into the occupancy of essentially imported people. And if you look into the situation with people from the mainland, we have come to the point where we literally subsidize homeless from the mainland. We are offering a care package in the order of $30,000. Medicare, Medicaid, free post office box, food stamps, and $3 a night shelters. So younger homeless from the mainland come in with a $400 one-way trip, and we take good care of them. You don't believe me? Go to the National Public Radio, npr.org. Wayne Yoshioka, a local, very talented public radio reporter, he interviewed homeless from the mainland in Waikiki. One of them from Phoenix, he was so grateful to us. He came here, and within 2 weeks, he fixed his teeth. Over $2,000, and you and I paid for it. And this is only one of hundreds of cases. Instead of incentivizing tourists, we incentivize mainland homeless. This really has to end, because they're taking money, actually, that we could be using to taking care of our seniors, and that is a far higher priority. Thank you.
The question I have is relates to budget, because that's the thing that I think somewhere I'm going to have to be paying for the budget. The two things that come to mind is, number one, when Mufi left office just before leaving, he decided to sign a consent decree. What that means is that finally, after years and years of pushing the EPA around, finally agreed to settle the sewage as well as sewage treatment facilities to the cost of $4.7 billion. And because we don't have the cash to pay for it all in one sum, we have to spread it out over 15 years. So the total package for this sewage treatment is going to be $7.2 billion. That's going to be something in addition to what we pay for right now in taxes. It's going to be some new monies that we have to pay for. And not only that, now we have the bill for the train. That's another X amount of money. We don't know exactly how much it's going to cost, but it's going to come from my pockets. So I wanted to know from you, especially Rod, you're in the city council, how do you figure out how we're going to pay for the tremendous cost to us?
Those are very good questions. And you cannot run away from those questions, quite frankly. Anybody like myself who runs for mayor have to face those questions. The job is not a glorious one, basically, when you have to deal with problems. In fact, even the job as a city councilman deals with problems every single day. And I've been dealing with that for a number of years. In fact, even before becoming a councilman, I was dealing with problems of the city, roads and so forth, and constant resurfacing, basically. A road only lasts for so long, quite frankly. It's like washing a car. It only keeps it clean for so long, basically. Then you have to redo it again. Now, the first thing is in terms of consent decree. And basically, I'm saddened that the former mayor decided last minute, just before he left office, to settle, quite frankly. All during the years that he was in office, 6 years, he said, I'm going to fight it. I need the council support, basically. And he convinced our attorneys, the Corporation Council, that we can win. Okay? And so we are led to believe by attorneys that we could win, okay? But all this time, basically, when you think about it, and it's politics. You have to be open about it. Politics was that the former mayor wanted to leave whereby it was not a burden left on his shoulder. So he said, okay, I'm going to settle it. But he left the problem with the new administration and also the council. He left the problem with the people, to be honest with you. Okay. And it's shameful when you think about it. You know, you finish one job, so you figure, okay, I'm going to temporarily band-aid it and then move on to the next job, quite frankly. But how are we going to deal with it? Well, basically, like I said, we have to stabilize and stimulate our economy. And we have expenses, everyday expenses of services, and we have expenses in terms of that the sewage plant. We have to renovate it. Well, and our sewer lines. I'm looking at bringing in new money from overseas. Like I said earlier, there are investors from China that want to bring in cash. They want to use Hawaii and city county of Honolulu as an international meeting place. The international meeting place so that they can do business worldwide. East meets West, so to speak. Okay. And they wanted to bring millions of dollars in. You know, China, when I first went there in 1984, it was not well off, but they opened the doors. I remember going to Zhongshan, southern part of China, Guangdong, to establish a sister state-province relationship when I was a representative. And they had soldiers every single corner with rifles, quite frankly. And I see someone now, they had, they've probably seen that, yeah. But now they don't have that. And what they did, they opened the doors to investors. Today, China is very prosperous. Okay. So we can do that. And the other question was in terms of the rail itself. The rail was supposed to take care of traffic congestion. And in a time when we was first introduced, the city county of Honolulu was okay financially. But finances have changed, quite frankly. The world of finances has changed. What we need to do is reevaluate in terms of whether we can do it, quite frankly. And although we have contracts, yes, if we break the contracts, then we're going to pay a penalty. Well, let's try in terms of see whether we can create budget for construction and also for administration and existence of a rail. But if we cannot, then we have to let it go. Okay? Now, you have to carry on those contracts legally, otherwise we get sued, basically. That's the only thing that's hanging over our head right now, quite frankly. So we have to do some due diligence. And there's other ways in terms of moving traffic around. You know, like I said, add more buses, have bus lanes. For example, I've been to Taiwan. They have devoted bus lanes. And people want to travel on the buses. There are basically several things that we have to consider in terms of any type of mass transportation. Number one, is it affordable to the rider? Is that cheaper than using their own vehicle to encourage them to use the mass transportation, whether it be a bus or a rail or what have you? Okay. Number two is basically, is it convenient? Can I get from my home that I live in a residential area, like for example, I live in Powell, to town, even if I want to catch the rail on a timely basis? Or do I have to wait and transfer so many times? I'm going to feel frustrated and say, what's the use of using a rail, basically, right? Then thirdly, and it's a practical thing to think about, if it's clean and it's safe. Nobody wants to go on any mass transportation system that's not clean and not safe. Thank you.
And this will be you get the last say because we're out of time.
Very good. Good question, Mike. And we actually did that statement in the introduction of my part. We covered it, but I'll be happy to summarize. Train, we don't need it. We cannot afford it. We don't need it because, again, it's the 1% solution. So it doesn't solve the congestion. Why pay for it? We cannot afford it at $6 billion and counting. Remember, when we voted for rail in 2008, the price tag was $4.6 billion. 2 years later, and we haven't even started any construction, it went $1 billion over. So imagine when they actually start constructing it. One remark about the rail is that contracts have been issued, but the rail is an illegal project to build. Nobody can build it now. The environmental process has not been concluded. The governor has to sign. The burial council has to sign. The federal government has to accept. It has to go into the federal register. We have to conclude the FFGA full funding grant agreement to get the federal money, and then we can start. Earliest that all this can happen is early 2012. It's not good for now. It's not good for jobs. Let's put it to sleep. The important thing is to set our priorities straight and start with the sewers. The important thing is to borrow the money now. Right now, the bond float is 4%. Inflation is expected to kick in. If we borrow the same money at 6%, that's 50% more interest we pay for nothing. So we need to get started doing the essential stuff now, float the bonds and get going on projects that we must do. Thank you very much for the forum. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both of our candidates for excellent answers to the questions, and thank you for coming.